This is Ed Asner, and you're listening to No Lies Radio.
Okay, hello, Ibrahim, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I'm sorry. Okay, we got the technical issues fixed here at Truth Jihad Radio. We got Ibrahim Sudi on the line. Ibrahim is a structural engineer with a PhD in structural engineering, and he's one of the most qualified people on Earth to talk about what happened to the three World Trade Center skyscrapers that disappeared at almost freefall acceleration, turning into very fine dust. Much of the concrete was reduced to sub-100 micron dust, a.k.a. talcum powder. And it's pretty obviously controlled demolition. Not every architect or engineer is willing to say it, but Ibrahim is. And Ibrahim also wants to bring the truth movement together and get us working together rather than at cross purposes. He's got an idea for a 9/11 truth coalition. Ibrahim, what's going on with this 9/11 truth coalition you're starting?
Well, number one, thanks for inviting me again on your program. I always enjoy talking to you. Number two, I think we are only now a week away from the 14th anniversary of this horrible event that led to death of thousands of people here in America, and then almost a million Iraqis, decimation, complete decimation, actually, of Iraq. And now you see the decimation of Syria, which is kind of a follow-up. The people who did 9/11 did it to invade Iraq, plant the seeds of sectarian conflict between the people of Iraq, and they knew once they started that in Iraq, it will just roll over over the whole area. And you can see now in Syria, in Lebanon, in Libya, in Yemen. So after 14 years of the events and the truth movement, I kind of jokingly or half jokingly call it the 9/11 truth non-moving movement. There are very good people out there who are doing quite a bit of good work, like architects and engineers for 9/11 truth and similar groups, but kind of like in their own field, all those little groups, firefighters and lawyers and pilots and so on, scientists and so many groups, without really kind of coordination between them or at least a stated goal in what they are trying to do. Architects and engineers, for example, who are doing terrific work informing people and stuff, putting ads across the street from the New York Times and stuff like that, are asking for a new investigation. We all know that the people who committed the crime from Washington, D.C., as well as in other areas too, and also in other countries, will not allow another independent investigation. So it's good to ask for that, but don't expect much returning. So what I'm thinking about is that we have now so many people who have done very valid and admirable research and came up with some very good material to challenge the official story, but we don't have something that ties us together. So I am really thinking of putting a kind of a coalition to bring these groups together in something that should not let anybody fear that they will lose their own independence. Like, I'm not asking any particular group from the many truth groups out there to lose their own independence and whatever they want to do. All what I'm saying is that the millions around the world who are fully convinced that the official story is a lie are looking for some leadership, and the leadership has to come from here in America. And with these groups, every one of them in their own, doing their own stuff, well, we have to bring kind of leadership into the game here. And that's in short the goal of the coalition I'm proposing.
Let me ask about the kind of where the leadership is trying to lead to, because that seems to me to be the million-dollar question here, is what precisely will you be asking these people? I assume, you know, you might want to get the various groups to all agree to be somehow affiliated with this 9/11 Truth Coalition. And as you ask them to do that, it's one thing to say, well, we need to just be united, and but what are we united on? And that's what was the million-dollar question. You know, people are constantly squabbling about should we all, you know, support the missing 28 pages resolution in the Congress, or should is that watered down 9/11 Truth, and do we need to come out and say it was the Zionists, not the Saudis, that did it? You know, people are always squabbling about these sorts of things, and if we're going to unite, I would think that maybe it wouldn't be so much on a particular interpretation of 9/11 as on a particular goal, such as getting, let's say, an international investigation led by actual judges in Europe or Japan or wherever. It seems that we need to unite on some practical program that is a concrete proposal. Otherwise, just calling for abstract unity, probably, I don't think it's going to work.
Well, let's take that one step at a time. And number one, we all agree in the 9/11 Truth Movement, we all agree that the official story is not true. We all agree on this one. What happened, unfortunately, after that is people started looking into details, for example, like what kind of explosives exactly were used in the destruction of the towers. And some people came up with mini nukes, and some people came up with directed energy weapons, and I think Stephen Jones found nanothermite in the dust and stuff like that. And then people started squabbling and arguing over the exact details of what really happened. Well, I'm a professional, and I can say that without having access to all the information, there is no really way for us to know exactly what happened. Like to say, oh, this is exactly what happened, is something that I am not myself willing to say, because I did not have access to all the information. I did not visit the site after the collapse directly. I did not look at the dust and the debris from the collapse and stuff like that. So away from the details, we all agree that the official story is not true. That's number one. If you ask me what is the mission statement of the coalition that I'm proposing, I will say it's one word. It's actually justice. We should all be doing this not to be the smartest kid on the block and who is the smart one who solved the problem. And we are all acting kind of like Columbo. You remember the Columbo television series where Peter Falk was always very smart and he knew that? That's exactly how we are acting now. Everybody wants to be the smartest kid on the block. I am saying that this is a crime, and we should treat it as if it's a crime, as a crime, because it is. And then we need to bring the perpetrators of that crime to justice. So the aim of the whole thing should be justice. That's in short the mission statement. I'm saying the idea of the coalition, actually, number one, it will bring people together and reduce the waste in energy and the exchanges over the details, because we can have simply a research department within the coalition and then let the experts speak. The trouble, Kevin, with what I see in the 9/11 Truth Movement is that so many people who are not even qualified to talk about many subjects are just everyone is putting ideas out there and fighting with each other over who's right and who's wrong. The idea of now bringing us into a coalition and then having a research department with experts in every field, like, for example, structural engineering, engineered demolition, aeronautical engineering, pilots, firefighters, and stuff like that. Once you reduce the noise to giving only the experts the chance to put their opinions out, and then we listen to those experts, each one in their field, believe it or not, we will reduce quite a bit of pollution in the air within the movement itself. And then everybody will know where they belong and what they are supposed to do and stuff like that, if they are really interested in seeking justice. So the coalition will have a research department for details, and those details will be addressed by experts about airport movie or something, and then now all of a sudden has ideas and theories about what happens to airplanes at specific speed. No. We don't. We wasted so much time and energy, and divided ourselves by everyone who does not have a clue about something talking about that thing. So the idea of the coalition to me will create kind of an authority in terms of who are qualified to speak, and then those who want to argue with them can go to those experts and then convince them or bring other experts to argue with those experts. That's number one.
How would that work? It's, you know, we have a number of professional groups already. I joined, was it called a Spine? Was it Scientific Professionals Investigating 9/11 with Key Dudney? And it functions a lot like what you're describing. And then there's also, there are two scholars groups alongside Spine. There's the architects and engineers, of course. There's pilots for 9/11 Truth, firefighters for 9/11 Truth, lawyers for 9/11 Truth, military and intelligence professionals for 9/11 Truth, and on and on and on. So these groups already exist, and within each group, there are people with various degrees of qualifications and expertise, but their opinions are often quite conflicting on various kinds of details. Sometimes the people with theoretically the most expertise are questioned by others with less expertise. For instance, in pilots, John Lear may have the most expertise as a pilot. He's flown every kind of plane that exists, and yet there are some people in and around pilots who argue that, you know, John Lear, who's, you know, flown for the CIA and says that there are alien bases on the moon and stuff, is not a reliable source. And so you have these kinds of discussions going on. As a matter of practical organization, I'm curious as to how you would propose to sort out the relative qualifications of the experts. Once you, let's say you get the leaders of each of these groups to join your group and come under the umbrella of the 9/11 Truth Coalition. So now how do we take these groups and determine the level of expertise of each member, and then have, you know, have those groups, you know, come to some kind of conclusions based on that expertise?
Sure. Assuming that we will create something out of nothing. In fact, Wayne Coste, I'm sure you are familiar with his name, he was with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and he still is. But he noticed that the scope of work within the 9/11 Truth movement is limited only to the three towers that collapsed at the World Trade Center on 9/11, or the three main towers that collapsed, because there was other damage to other buildings too. And he thought that that's limited because they are not talking about the airplanes and pilots, and then they are not talking about the Pentagon and Pennsylvania, the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania. So he created this new thing called the 9/11 Truth Outreach. And actually, if you go through that website, it's like, I wish he would agree with me, and we are going to talk over the coming few days directly to convert that or expand it to become actually the website of the 9/11 Truth Coalition. I agree with you, and I know that there are all these groups out there, and I don't mind that all experts disagreeing. I think that's healthy. What I'm afraid of, Kevin, and I'm trying to find the solution around, is that people have become cheerleaders for the different experts. Like, you find now there is a group of, like, for example, there was a very prominent, actually, 9/11 Truth member who came up with very valuable physical conclusions, who I met earlier this year, and he told me that when he was giving a presentation, part of the people in the audience who are supporting another person who came up with a different theory were heckling him in the meeting. So here you have now people who supposedly agree that 9/11 official story was not really true, and they go to the event of one expert who to heckle him because they are now the cheerleaders of another expert. This is what I'm trying to deal with, because people, quite frankly, the public that ultimately who are we are trying to achieve or reach out to, look at this infighting between the different groups and say, well, when you guys agree on something, then come and tell me. Like the infighting within the 9/11 weakening unable to reach out to the ordinary people that we are trying to reach out to. So I'm not saying that we should, I'm happy to hear, and I know that there is pilots and there is firefight, but each one of them has a website. I am saying that hopefully we can have this website of 9/11 Truth Outreach. I'm not saying that they agreed already, but I'm saying I'm talking to them and actually putting links in there to all the other websites so that the average person in the world out there do not have to go to 100 different websites and find so much data confusing and stuff like that, that they do not really even know where to start or who to believe and stuff like that. So by starting this first step or bringing everything in one website or one social media outlet or something like that, the millions of people around the world now will not have to go on YouTube and then find the million videos that they do not really know who to follow or who to believe or what is right and what's wrong.
Wait a minute. How is your website, the 9/11 Truth Coalition, going to put all that stuff out of business? I mean, people will still find that stuff, won't they?
No. I'm not saying that we will put all the stuff in one website and then ignore the other one. I am just saying put links, just a link, a tab. Within, if you actually go to the website already existing of political leaders for 9/11 Truth, you find actually on the left side on their main page links or tabs that will take you into the website of architects and engineers, and then one tab for pilots, and then one tab for firefighters, and so on. So the idea is already existing in there. I'm just saying that we need to kind of remove all the noise within the 9/11 Truth movement and make it kind of more organized, kind of more. You can go to a library, Kevin. You can go to any library and you will find different books that talk about the same subject and provide different opinions. I don't have a problem with that at all. But all the books are in one location on the library, and the person can actually scan through them and then see the differences and stuff like that. I am not seeing that out there put in a library. Number one, the first thing that the coalition will do is it will create this virtual library now by bringing everything together so that people can. And then when you see a discussion between experts, you can see now why this one is saying that and this one is saying that. And then people can start seeing actually a bigger picture, because quite frankly, regardless of how expert each expert is, and I'm one of those experts, like I said at the very beginning of this program, without having all the information, I cannot really say what exactly happened. I can say that the official story does not make sense. So the first thing about the coalition, Kevin, is that it will give the millions around the world who already understand that the official story is not true an idea that those professionals and experts are no longer acting like children and fighting with each other and arguing who is the smart one, but they are actually working together to achieve justice. That is what I'm talking about, is that let me say something here, and it might go a little bit in history and where we are now and why the American culture is the way it is. In the Middle Ages in Europe, the Roman Catholic Church was the only authority shaping the society away from the kings and stuff like that. The kings were just getting the blessing of the Pope, but the actual shaper of the thinking of the people were the popes, the Roman Catholic Church. And then came Martin Luther and then started the Protestant division of Christianity. And then the first thing actually they established is that every individual now has the freedom to interpret the word of the Bible according to their own faith and according to their own understanding. That was quite a shift, moving away from the dogma of the only authority interpreting the Bible is the Roman Catholic Church. So individualism here, in terms of freedom of thought and freedom of thinking, was introduced in Europe. That's actually something perfect, and I fully support. The trouble or the unintended consequence that happened actually because of that is the individualistic attitude and the me, me, me I am the smartest one. I am the big guy. And that actually became part of the culture that we are living here and leading now people, instead of actually having a mature, reasonable discussion, to put their disagreements in front of everybody and then have a civilized discussion. We have people now, and I think I don't have to mention names. You are very familiar with that yourself, who right away accuse others of being infiltrators or hiding the truth or working for the CIA or whatever. And all of that, quite frankly, is just making everybody around the world, the 80% of Germans or so who do not believe the official story, the millions and millions of people in the Middle East, Africa and Asia and Europe and South America who do not believe, are looking at us here in America and say, when are these guys going to grow up and act like mature people and then provide the leadership that the whole world is waiting for?
Well, in France, they have a saying that les Américains sont des grands enfants. The Americans are just big babies or big children.
Well, here you, thank you very much. Thank you very much. You just supported my point.
Right, right. And you know, I agree with you. I think the real issue here is sort of how to go about it. And, you know, you might be onto something. It might be, I would say, the simpler the better. You know, keep it simple, stupid kind of thing. Maybe some kind, basically, you know, I think we have a nucleus of good professional 9/11 truth groups. You know, the really, you know, they're all pretty solid. Yeah, you know, they have little disputes and little differences here and there, but I think they're all pretty good. And then of course there's 9/11 consensus, which has been trying to iron out the wrinkles and the differences of opinion. So maybe the simple way to do this, Ibrahim, would be to create a kind of a button thing, you know, a website button thing that basically, you know, it would say, you know, 9/11, you know, 9/11, let's see, what are you going to call your group again?
Well, I'm trying to call it 9/11 Truth Coalition.
Okay, 9/11 Truth Coalition. So you have a banner sort of that says 9/11 Truth Coalition, and then beneath that is like each of the groups in the coalition, and it would start with the professional groups, or maybe just be the professional groups. And so you just invite them to join. And so then that, you know, that becomes sort of a little endorsement or a little kind of a logo, sort of like Underwriters Labs has that logo they put on their products that are certified. So you have this sort of certification logo thing of the 9/11 Truth Coalition, and it has within that logo a link to the websites of each of the groups that are part of the coalition. And then they can put that on their website. So everybody who has this logo, 9/11 Truth Coalition, on their website is part of the coalition, and people would probably want to have their group be part of it because, you know, it would have prestige, especially because Architects and Engineers seems to be the most professional, prestigious group. If they're part of it and all these other groups are part of it, then everybody would want to be part of it. And possibly, you know, but as far as the content, as you suggested, maybe it could just be sort of we want justice. You know, we don't agree on everything about what we think really happened, but we all agree that the official story is nonsense, that a terrible crime was committed, and that it needs to be prosecuted. And so we're working for any realistic forum for prosecution of the perpetrators of this crime. Something simple like that, and then have simply that logo, or, you know, that kind of insignia. I think, you know, and that might, you know, it's not going to rid the internet of all of the nonsense and the craziness and the silly disputes and the egocentricity, but it would create the impression of a somewhat better thought out, more organized and responsible kind of effort. And it would sort of distinguish the serious professional groups from everybody else, and it would tend to motivate people to want to be more serious and professional and kind of work with that group. Now, of course, you'd probably have people attacking you just for the heck of it, because, you know, that happens. But I think this would be a positive step. Does this sound like a good way to do it, or do you have some other way that you envision this proceeding?
Well, I think, no, I actually think that you have provided now a very nice idea. It looks like at least I'm now convincing you, or started to convince you, that there is a different line of thinking that we need to start at least exploring. Yeah. And I'm, like I say, I am saying it now on the air, and I take full responsibility for it. I am just exploring the idea, and I am finding actually that there is traction out there. Like the happen. Okay, fine. Those who want to be called the smartest kids on the block, please come forward and identify yourselves, and I will actually mention your names on the air and say that this person is the smartest person on Earth, if that's really what you want. If that's what, because quite frankly, look at what's happening now. Migrants dying in the seas, and people are leaving their countries of origin, not knowing even where to do, where to go or what to do. And then you have now all these problems. Can you imagine now, Kevin, what will happen during the remainder of this century? All these migrants who will end up in Europe will later on be targeted by the original Europeans who do not want these strangers in their homes. And then you will have, again, pogroms and all these massacres. All of that will happen. The world is falling into chaos, and we are still arguing over who is the smartest kid. And no. And I am making an invitation right now on your program to everybody who is into the 9/11 truth movement or believes that the official story is not true. If you have an idea, please contact Kevin via his website. And
that would be truthjihad.com. You can just click on contact at truthjihad.com.
Yeah, and send Kevin your ideas. We want to hear from people. We want to hear ideas. I'm not a dictator. I'm not saying that this is how. No. I am exploring it. I'm trying to find a way forward. Because quite frankly, I'm really tired of reading all this news and all that stuff about people. Just countries are being destroyed, and millions of people do not know where to go, and wars based on lies. Will the, after 2,000 years of Christ, we should have had much better world, actually, than the world we are looking at now. So if anybody out there has ideas, please contact Kevin via truthjihad.com and contact, send him an email or something, and he will forward that to me, and we will be considering that. So here is a competition. Here is actually a real invitation for those smart ones out there to come up with ideas and tell us how we can move forward. If you are really smart and you want to be the smartest person on the planet or on the block or whatever your area is, come up with an idea now to move this 9/11 truth movement forward than squabbling with other people over what was the exact type of explosives or whatever it is that you are so busy arguing about, with people dying around the world and countries being destroyed.
Okay, well, that's a very eloquent statement. You know, I think there are a couple of different perspectives that people, various people would probably bring into this. For instance, one thing we've been hearing from Webster Tarpley for a long time is that the way to think about 9/11 is not so much in analyzing all of the technical evidence. We have more than enough of that, but rather understanding the political situation that gave rise to it. And that's still going on. You know, 9/11 didn't happen in a vacuum. I'm sure it was the most important and influential event of this new century. It did give half of U.S. Americans clinical PTSD, according to studies cited by Dr. Martha Stout in her book, The Paranoia Switch. And it's certainly the most important of the many catalysts that have pushed the world in the wrong direction over the last 15 plus years. But it's part of an overall context that needs to be understood by people who want to work politically to change things for the better. And for that reason, some people include, well, Webster Tarpley, of course, has his own political program. You know, he has a particular spin on the notion that it's the banksters stupid, and that what we really need is to get people to rise up and take back the power from the financier elite, banksters, whatever you want to call them, the people who are gobbling up the real economy and turning it into a giant casino, siphoning off more and more of the wealth from the real economy. And that's the process that has to be stopped and reversed. And to understand that in the big picture, how that's playing out around the world, you know, this requires paying attention to politics, current event politics. So that's one possible perspective. There's another perspective that would argue that the single biggest force behind 9/11 was radical neoconservative Zionism. And that we won't really solve this problem that's created millions of Middle Eastern refugees until we solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And the only way to solve that is by recognizing the inherent injustice of Zionism as an idea and putting an end to it and making Palestine a land for all its people, regardless of their religion or ethnic background. So those are a couple of the kinds of perspectives that I would expect to hear. And that's, of course, kind of different from what you're talking about, Ibrahim. You're saying, you know, we want this 9/11 Truth Coalition focused purely on 9/11. I think that's a good thing, and I think you should.
Oh, no, no. Let me interrupt you here, Kevin. Yeah. I actually did not mean that. I did not mean for – no, no, no. I fully agree with everything that you said, except maybe one, two things. Number one, the one I interrupted you for, which is you thought that I'm just focusing on 9/11. No, no, no. I am actually agreeing with you on everything else you said, except that you thought the two perspectives as if they are separate. I actually think the two perspectives are one and the same. They are combined. They are not really two different perspectives. No, no, no. I actually think that the reason I am trying to get over this dispute within the 9/11 truth groups or scattering or whatever, I don't want to call it disputes, scattering, is that I attended so many presentations by members of the 9/11 truth, and none of them actually knows how to speak politically. They all know how to speak technically, but they do not really know how to speak politically. And that's exactly what you hit on when you mentioned Tarbley. The trouble now is we need to bring this political skill, the people with political skills, with the technical people kind of working together, which is missing. Like you look at every group, whether it's architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, pilots, firefighters, whatever you want to call them, scientists, all of them actually are very good at talking technically, but have no clue almost about political skills or how to play the political game, or even how to expose your case to the public people out there in a way that would attract them to you. Do you know, Kevin, that I was actually in a meeting lately where people, even people from the 9/11 Truth Movement, they did not know that they could be members of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth without being architects or engineers. Like they thought that actually you have to be an architect or an engineer to get involved with a group like architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Well, they must have been sleeping through that part of Richard Gage's speech.
well, but what I am saying is that Richard Gage and other people have done wonderful job and are still doing wonderful job, but the political aspect and the strategic thinking and the looking at the global map of the world and then thinking who's really behind that stuff and who's moving them is missing from their work. And that's exactly what I and Wayne Coste and other people are talking about, is how to bring this political aspect, strategic thinking, into the game rather than just talk about the details and what happens to a plane when it flies at air with this density at that speed. All of that is fine and dandy, but that's only part of the big picture. We have to look at the big picture like you just said. Yeah.
But isn't that kind of a different animal? Like if we were to, let's say, invite Webster Tarpley's group, whatever that may be this year, into the 9/11 Truth Coalition, and then let's say we also invited some anti-Zionist group into the 9/11 Truth Coalition, the people who have some disagreement with Webster or with our anti-Zionist group are then maybe going to, you know, to start fighting with them. You know, see, this is the problem is anytime that you bring people together for a particular cause, then you get a lot, you know, everybody has a million opinions, right? And nobody matches up perfectly with anybody else in terms of all of their opinions being exactly the same as somebody else's. So we all have differences. We all have commonalities. When we join together to work towards a particular goal, we're joining on the basis of commonalities. For example, agreeing that the official version of 9/11 is nonsense, that a horrific crime of mass murder and mass deception was perpetrated, and that we have to try to prosecute the perpetrators, is something we can all agree on, whether we're Christians or Muslims or atheists, you know, whether we're anti-banksters or whether we're nice, namby-pamby liberals who think that the Federal Reserve is basically okay, needs just a few minor reforms. You know, there are all sorts of different possible views people can have. And there could be very conservative people. There can be radical nationalists. There can be white nationalists. There can be, you know, Jewish nationalists. And there could be Zionists like Rabbi Michael Lerner, who contributed to our We Are Not Charlie Hebdo book, who kind of played around with 9/11 truth in the previous book that I published, my, you know, compilation 9/11 in the American Empire, Volume 2. There's all sorts of, but, you know, if we get an anti-Zionist book or group into our 9/11 truth coalition, and this anti-Zionist group says, which I think would be absolutely correct, that Zionism per se is racism, it's wrong, has to end, Palestine has to belong to all its people, regardless of religion, ethnicity, no more Jewish state, no more Jewish superiority in Palestine, Rabbi Lerner will, and a lot of people like him, will turn tail and flee. And likewise, a whole lot of people have been brainwashed to think that Webster Tarpley is connected with these previous groups that he was part of, the LaRouche group, right? You know, people have been brainwashed and they go, oh, LaRouche, that's what a crazy guy. And Tarpley was connected to him. So, oh my God, Tarpley's in the 9/11 Truth Coalition. Ah, what a bunch of crazies. You know, let's run and turn tail and flee. You know, this is the kind of issue that you deal with. So I think if you're doing a 9/11 Truth Coalition per se, it basically should be really simple and it should just be, we want justice, and that's all it should be. We don't have to agree on anything else. But that's, of course, not the only thing worth doing. As you're doing your 9/11 Truth Coalition, other people can be working on these other issues that not everybody in your coalition is going to agree on. Does that make sense, or do you think that this 9/11 Truth Coalition should be bringing in all of these different kinds of approaches?
No. I fully agree with you, actually. But there is two things here that we need to understand, Kevin. I think you agree with me that, and you even mentioned it in French earlier, that the French say that the Americans are just big babies. We all agree on that. So part actually, when you have children in one place, I guess it's now the job of the adults to kind of like make sure that these kids are somehow like either getting mature, like growing up, or they kind of like start exposing the childish behavior of individuals. Yeah. So when it comes to the political thing and the differences in opinion and whether this person is credible or whatever, we agree now that, for example, or at least we talked about, one tab within the website will be political leaders for 9/11 truth, right? Like there is already existing political leaders for 9/11 truth. I don't really know if they are doing much work out there. I even tried to figure out who is in control of the website they have. I did not have much success with that. But when it comes to, let's say, for example, if you have a website of the coalition, then there is political action part of their tab. And then those who are interested in the political thing will go into the political tab and then see the disagreements and stuff like that. And then those who are not interested will go out. The coalition, like I said, will not make anybody or any group lose their own total independence. This is actually one thing. And when I say the coalition, Kevin, the big boys, the mature ones, who will agree with the idea and want to join it, of course, will have to set rules on what they will accept in membership of the coalition. Like if, let's say, 10 or whatever the number is of really mature people who are fed up with the current bickering and this childish behavior agreed to come together in a coalition, will those people now will have the right to put kind of rules on who they will allow into the discussion? And quite frankly, somebody like Corbett of the Corbett Report, I think his name is Steve Corbett. Yeah, to me, that would be terrific into the political thing, and he has actually credibility more than many people that when they had the hearings in Malaysia, he was invited as the youngest member, and he actually spoke very eloquently there. So when it comes to the political thing, we don't even have to go through the controversial names and the people who... No, go to somebody like Cynthia McKinney. Go to somebody like... Steve Corbett, and that's it. Like, we, I. them can argue and think, argue with each other. And the part of being, have you attended, you must have attended conferences for science or literature or humanities or something like that.
I've been to more conferences than I could possibly remember.
You noticed that big professors who have names and stuff like that sometimes strongly disagree with each other, but they do not point fingers and make accusations. No, they act like real mature boys, big men and women, and they do not act childishly. And part of moving forward with the 9/11 Truth Movement is also to change the culture that we are living in. And I quite frankly have an advantage in me as a person. I wish everybody would do that. That whenever I hear somebody saying a technical opinion about something regarding 9/11 or any other thing, I actually ask them right away, what makes you qualified to make that opinion? Like, before you tell me your opinion, I want to know, what credentials do you have to say an opinion like that? Because we suffered quite a bit, like I said earlier, from everybody who has seen a movie or something, and then all of a sudden they consider themselves experts about something just because they want to talk, because they do not know when to stop talking, when actually stop talking is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it all matters. You know, what matters is who you're talking to and for what purpose. I mean, I wouldn't want everybody to stop talking, but I do think a lot of people probably would be better off talking to the unconverted, you know, going out and you know, hanging out in the local public place and handing out information, sort of like our good friend Robin Horton of Seattle, who's not always the easiest guy to get along with, to say the least. But at least one thing you can say about Robin is, for all of the, you know, the opinionated nonsense, well, I shouldn't say nonsense, but he can be very opinionated, to say the least. But like so many other people in this movement, but Robin at least gets out there and does this amazing activism. He has signs and handouts and this and that, and he goes out all over Seattle to all of these public events, and he introduces all kinds of people to 9/11 Truth in a reasonably well thought out way. Even if you don't totally agree with everything he does and says, he's still doing a pretty darn good job of that outreach. So frankly, Ibrahim, I would be willing to, you know, kind of look aside and be tolerant towards people's personal eccentricities and their being a little too opinionated and too proud of their own ability to understand technical issues, as long as they're actually getting out and trying to talk to ordinary people in an appropriate way to reach ordinary people. You know, if all they're doing is hanging out on the internet, going to chat rooms and commenting on posts and fighting about, you know, whether directed energy weapons or nuclear weapons or nanothermite took down the towers, that strikes me as being kind of a bad faith way of spending your time. If you want to do some of that, sure, but I hope you're spending, like, for every 10 minutes you're spending on the internet doing that, you should be spending at least an hour going out to talk to ordinary people in your community the way Robin Horton does. You agree with that or no?
Well, I number one, I don't want to mention a specific name, so I will leave that to you if you wanted to.
Okay.
But I agree in principle that people should reach out to people outside. What I'm trying to say here is that people should not try to get into technical details without being qualified to talk about those technical details. That's what I'm trying to say here. Because they end up actually saying stuff that's wrong out there. And then when those people out there who listen to that stuff start repeating it with other people who might know something different, that's where actually the conflicts and the tension and the bickering starts. Is that this one heard that, and then this one heard that, and then now, well, we, instead of focusing now on that the original stuff cannot be true, the original story cannot be true, we are arguing now on whether I am the right one or you are the right one. So I'm kind of like more see where the risk is and then try to eliminate the risk if you can. I'm not saying people should not talk, but what I'm saying is don't talk about structural engineering issues as if you are a structural engineer if you are not. That's what I'm talking about.
Like, Ibrahim, wait a minute, though. I'm a humanities guy. I have a, you know, PhD in African languages and literature, the language being Arabic, and I've taught a lot of literature and I've taught folklore and religious studies and things like that. So I am not qualified to talk about structural engineering, and yet I will tell you that when I was doing 9/11 truth teach-ins on Library Mall at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in 2004, 2005, and 2006, I met a lot of engineers, and I was a much more qualified analyst of what happened to those buildings in New York than any of those people were. I heard more complete nonsense from these supposedly qualified people than you would ever imagine possible. And after that experience, I started wondering how buildings stand up if they're built by boneheads like these qualified people.
No. But see, the point is, Kevin, I'm not saying that the people should not talk at all. What I'm saying is, if you are not, like, for example, in your case, I bet you that when you were talking to them, you were actually mentioning quite a bit of stuff, referring to what you have read or what you have seen or you heard from architects and engineers.
This was long before architects and engineers even existed. When I was talking about these things in 2004 through 2006, there were just a very small handful of engineers out there who had even discussed this in public. There were like two or three, I think, in the whole world at that point.
But you were not, you were actually, like, I don't want to waste the time now going into the depth. If you were telling them, for example, that the thing collapsed at free fall acceleration, for example, yeah, that's actually physics. That's not structural engineering.
That's true. Well,
I don't have a problem with fifth grade
physics to these engineers. And the engineers were telling me that the buildings imploded the second that the plane touched them. You know, these kinds of stupid things.
What I'm saying is, to me, when people talk about 9/11, and then I want to mention to them something about airplanes, I actually refer to Bob Bowman and the pilots for 9/11 Truth. That's what I do, is to actually reference the people who are experts. And then when those experts start talking about planes and stuff like that, I just enjoy listening and not make myself an expert. That's what I am trying to say. I think I will repeat it again, Kevin. I am saying that the people who are talking to outsiders, trying to bring them into the 9/11 truth, all what I am saying is, don't talk to people about structural engineering as if you are a structural engineer. Refer to what structural engineers within the movement already. An example for that, Kevin, is remember the documentary movie that architects and engineers that called Experts Speak Out?
Oh, yes.
I think this is exactly how it should be done. Is if you really want to spread the word about 9/11 truth, show as many people as possible that movie or documentary that experts speak out, because every one of those experts is having a ton of experience in their respective areas. Engineers are talking about engineering, psychologists about psychology, fire engineers about fire engineering, physicists about physics, and that is exactly the way it should be done, Kevin. Yeah. So instead of me trying to become an expert in firefighting, for example, or piloting or whatever, and I'm not, all what I need to do is to bring that documentary, Experts Speak Out, and then show it to people. I would do actually everybody a big favor if I do that, rather than I sit and start pulling stuff out of every part of me, and then at the end actually I misinformed the people or misdirected them, rather than actually I directed them. If actually we have a documentary like that, why do we need to waste the time talking? Why can't we just start showing it to people and then asking them for the response?
Well, that's an interesting idea. So we should be organizing community showings of Experts Speak Out, and we should be setting up a 9/11 Truth Coalition, beginning with all of the professional groups that already exist. All they need to do is create that little seal of approval logo, put it on their websites, and voila, we've got a 9/11 Truth Coalition. It will actually, I think, put a better face forward for the truth. Thank you, Kareem Sudi. I appreciate your thoughts. Look forward to the next.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Welcome back. This is the second hour of this evening's broadcast of Truth Jihad Radio right here on revolutionradio.com, the go-to network for truth talk. It's the number one listener-supported network out there. So please do go to freedomslips.com if you're not there already and give a little back. If you can subscribe or otherwise donate to Revolution Radio, that'll always be much appreciated. And likewise, any subscriptions, donations, or other benevolent gestures at truthjihad.com are always appreciated. It's your subscriptions to truthjihad.com that keep this show on the air. All right, let's move on to the second hour. We're going to talk to another important figure in the truth movement, and that would be author-entrepreneur Sander Hicks, who has a fantastic new article out. It's called Confronting Jeb Bush, Two Reviews and a How-To. It's an article that links a video of Mike Jackman becoming the first person in history to demand answers from Jeb Bush concerning his 9/11 crimes. You didn't know Jeb Bush committed 9/11 crimes? You all knew about George W. and his pet goat speech. You knew about George W. saying that he saw the first plane hit the Trade Center, which means he saw it on a closed circuit system, and that has been confirmed by national security sources to Wayne Madsen. But you didn't know that Jeb Bush was a 9/11 criminal too. That's right. Jeb Bush flew a cargo plane straight to the CIA drug import airstrips in Florida that posed as flight schools, where the CIA assets, who would be blamed as 9/11 hijacker patsies, pretended to learn to fly during the run-up to 9/11. Those were not flight schools. There was no flight training going on there. They were CIA drug import airstrips. And the DEA made its biggest heroin bust ever in Central Florida history during the time that Muhammad Atta was hanging around smuggling drugs with his CIA friends at these drug import airstrips in Central Florida. Jeb Bush flew a cargo plane to these airstrips the moment the Twin Towers blew up. He was on that cargo plane heading for Central Florida, where he and his handpicked National Guard goons went into those so-called flight schools, which, as I said, were not really flight schools. They were drug landing strips. And Jeb and his goons took all the paperwork, all the files, and then they visited the local police department and basically at gunpoint stole the files from the police department completely illegally. Police have been investigating the activity at these drug airstrips. Jeb Bush took the police files, loaded them onto the cargo plane, and flew away with them. And they've never been seen since. Well, Mike Jackman got in Jeb Bush's face about this recently, and you can see the video at Sander's article, Confronting Jeb Bush, Two Reviews and a How-To. And now to talk about it is Sander Hicks. Let's see if we can bring Sander up here smoothly. I think we have him. Let's see. Are we bringing Sander into the call? Let's try once again. There we go. Okay. It's been a while since I talked to Sander, and he's a lively guy. He's one of my favorite people in the truth movement, and he was an inspiration for the We Are Not Charlie Hebdo book tour. I just drove more than 7,000 miles. That equals more than 10,000 kilometers on the We Are Not Charlie Hebdo book tour, doing talks all over the western half of the United States, Denver, Northern California, Portland, Seattle, up into Vancouver, Canada, and then on to Alberta, Canada, where I had four talks, three of which nearly got canceled after the B'nai B'rith, which is associated with the ADL or Anti-Defamation League, a hardline Zionist propaganda outfit, a bunch of unregistered agents of a foreign power, tried their best to get it shut down, but they failed. All four book talks in Canada succeeded. Well, Sander has a long history of driving around doing book talks and other kinds of tour stuff. He's usually gone in a smaller car. I took a minivan, but I had four large adults and a big dog to haul around in those 7,000 miles of book tour. I've seen Sander doing this in like a mid-sized car, I think. And he's driven all over the country, you know, and here we are trying to get Sander, but it's connecting, but it's not reaching him. That's kind of weird. What the heck is going on here? Well, let's see. We'll hang up and we'll try connecting with Sander one more time here. Let's see. Here we go. Come on, Sander. Okay. We're going to add Sander to the call and hope that this works. It's always a exciting evening here when we try to make the live show work. There have been a lot of glitches in Skype lately. It's interesting. all sorts of folks. Hey, there he is. I hear Sander's mad laughter. That's got to be Sander. I don't know who else it could possibly be. Sander? It's like we had him for a second there. We're getting a like a ringtone thing here. It's like ringtone, ringtone, endless ringtone trying to bring Sander up. It's like it's never answering. I wonder what would happen if we tried to get Sander through his cell phone. I don't know if that would work. Probably wouldn't.
Well, I'm still here.
Oh, Ibrahim's still here. Okay. Is that mad laughter coming from you, Ibrahim?
Yeah.
I thought it was Sander. Okay. We've got this, like, endless ringtone trying to bring up Sander. So let me, I'm going to send Sander a message here. I'm calling, but it's ringing endlessly. And hopefully Sander will figure out what the heck's going on here. Well, Ibrahim, I was just saying that Sander kind of inspired me to do this Charlie Hebdo book tour where, you know, I drove 7,000 miles doing book talks all over the West, because he does this every year or two. Every couple of years, it seems like Sander gets in a car and drives all over the country doing talks, often, you know, promoting a book. So here he's.
Yeah, I met him. I met him in Seattle here, I think, 2 or 3 years ago when he was on one of his tours. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's a lot of fun. I think he has a fair bit of political smarts. Let me see here. This is very strange. We've got this, like, endless attempt to connect with him. And I'm going to try one more time to get him and see what happens. This is why I sometimes prefer to pre-record the radio shows. That way I can put in really cool music. If anything goes wrong, I can just put in music afterwards. And, you know, if anybody says,
well, I can whistle. I can whistle if you whistle. Want me to.
Yeah, well. Yeah. And, you know, you can go back and cut out the bad words if there's anything the FCC wouldn't approve of. Yes. Not that I ever have to do that.
But it's interesting, the subject that you are talking about regarding Jeb Bush and stuff like that. I think as time passes by, more and more stuff will come to the fore, and more will become known about 9/11 and stuff like that. And that just reinforces what I'm seeing about we need to find a way to stop the bickering and the childish pointing of fingers and stuff like that, and start kind of channeling ourselves into a more mature movement, because that will actually bring even far more people into the movement.
You know, instead of pointing fingers, pointing fingers at each other, we should point fingers at people like Jeb Bush. Yeah, I think we might have Sander on the line now. It looks like Sander, are you there?
Kevin, how are you doing?
Oh, there he is.
I know. I'm a little bit rusty on the Skype skills, so you have to forgive me. Sorry, I'm late for the call. It's 9:10. It's about to be 9/11.
It is. We're going on 9/11, and we're also going on the anniversary of 9/11. And this is a good time to get in Jeb Bush's face. I thought your article was fantastic, Sander. Mike Jackman went out and they turned on a camera and asked Jeb Bush some hard questions about why he went in there and absconded with evidence about those CIA drug import airstrips that were pretending to be flight schools training Middle Eastern supposed hijackers. That was
right.
Great.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I wrote for my blog recently, Slingshot to the Blogspot. I wrote about the two different times in New Hampshire on the campaign trail that the already foundering Jeb Bush campaign ran into some popular resistance. And, yeah, two different questions were asked, difficult, provocative questions about 9/11 truth. And they weren't super, super aggressive people that were asking them, but I think the truth itself is pretty hard to avoid, especially if you're running a campaign that can't seem to get started.
Well, Jeb looked really uncomfortable. You know, if I were getting in his face, I think I would have been a little more hard-nosed. But I, like you said, just even bringing the subject up kind of makes him blanch.
Yeah, especially in my article, I tried to analyze the body language and look at the video and look for clues. You know, even Mike Jackman himself, the guy who asked the first question, he said, just look at stillness. Jeb does when he's asked about Wally Hilliard. Wally Hilliard was the owner of the Florida Flight Training Center down there in Venice, Florida, and is a very, you know, connected to the right wing in this country, connected to Jerry Falwell, and seemingly connected to CIA, and has some green lights from the DEA, and so that's when his planes with heroin are busted in Orlando. Nobody really prosecutes him, and seems to have sort of some sort of approved operation.
Well, yeah, they basically kind of apologized to him, you know, for busting his plane full of the biggest cargo of heroin ever busted in Central Florida. They apologized to him for busting him, and they gave him his plane back, and no charges, nothing.
That's true. That's true, yeah. I just recently reread media from the other side. You know, I've been reading a lot of Daniel Hopsicker, and Hopsicker was the one that broke that story about Wally Hilliard. And so at one point, I think the Orlando Sentinel even tried to get Wally Hilliard's point of view and tried to say, are you going to sue Daniel Hopsicker for saying this stuff? And they try to make Hilliard look like a mild-mannered old man who's beleaguered by bad press. And, so that was an interesting perspective. Yeah, Wally Hilliard seems to get a lot of breaks.
So did he actually talk to the media?
Yeah, he did. He did. He actually said, I'm not going to even read the book, but I've seen the stuff online, and it's just crazy. But Wally Hilliard's name, when Mike Jackman mentioned Wally Hilliard, Jeb Bush really stood still and really stopped kind of – it really got his attention. It's almost like he sort of perked up and woke up. And I thought it was very notable. In my article, I say we got to go farther. We got to be prepared. We got to ask follow-up questions. We got to not sit down when we're tapped on the shoulder by security. You know, we got to be ready to get arrested. We got to pray and meditate beforehand. We've got to be spiritual warriors. We got to be ready to suffer. We have to be ready to be tased. We've got to be ready to be beaten down and not strike back, but, you know, give it up for God and nonviolence and truth, force, and be the spiritual warriors that we're all called to be. And that includes asking really good follow-up questions. So, you know, Jeb is really vulnerable. Iran-Contra, the family of secrets. You know, this family has been doing dastardly deeds for a century now. Somebody could have said, like, well, if you were such a great governor of Florida, why did you not look into the many connections that the so-called terrorists had in your state? You know, why did you not launch a blue ribbon task force, you know, a governor's mansion or governor's office special task force on the many, many different connections, you know, Muhammad Atta, Khalid Almidar, Nawaf al-Hazmi, Fayed Banahama. These guys were in the Deep South. They were in Florida. You know, as you know, the Mossad kicked out, the Mossad were kicked out by the CIA on August 19th of 2001. You know, the Mossad were all around, also trying to track these guys down
they were kind of blanketing the hijacking patsies.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes you wonder whether there might be some kind of rogue network at work that, like Tarpley talks about, that might be sort of, you know, intersecting between big money, organized crime, and more than one intelligence agency. So, you know, a certain wing of the CIA, same wing of the CIA, the same kinds of people in the CIA covert ops world who work with drug smuggling also work with Mossad on the really dark, ultra-deniable operations.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm reminded suddenly of Oklahoma City, in which there's a really great book by Ambrose Evans Pritchard called The Secret Life of Bill Clinton. And it talks about Hillary and Bill Clinton and their secrets. But Oklahoma City was very interesting because it looked like there was an ATF operation that was infiltrating parts of Elohim City, which was a super right-wing group in Oklahoma. But there was also an FBI operation that was infiltrating other parts of it too. And so I don't think Timothy McVeigh was able to, like, bring down a significant portion of the structural columns of the Murrah building, which is a fertilizer bomb. You know, the physics of that are impossible, really. It's impossible to destroy the columns of the Murrah building.
that were destroyed by a simple fertilizer bomb. You know, the force of a fertilizer bomb is just going to, you know, bounce off of the building. So, yeah, it really seems like there was some sort of conflicting rogue networks, like you say, in Oklahoma City and also in 9/11. You know, I'm not saying that – I've never said that I think the entire CIA was behind it, but certain factions of shadow government operations, you know, that are compartmentalized, that are operating under deep cover, those are the kinds of things that the Bush family has been always very good at.
Well, that's right. You know, if I were going to ask Jeb a follow-up question – I think I might want to say something like, well, Jeb, you know that St. John Hunt got a confession from his dad, Howard Hunt, to participating in the CIA's assassinating President Kennedy. Has your dad ever confessed to leading one of the shooter teams in Dallas?
It's about that time, Jeb, don't you think? Are you looking forward to that? Yeah, the we hope that your deathbed confession is going to be as good or if not better.
You could get a best-selling book just like St. John did, Jeb.
Exactly.
That career, you're not going to get elected president, I'll tell you that.
You might get a bump in the polls, though, Jeb, on your way out. Yeah, boy. I mean, I never thought I would have sympathy for Jeb Bush. And I thought, like, I started flipping out a couple months ago, Kevin, when I heard that Jeb was definitely going to run and he was raising all this money. But boy, oh, boy, now suddenly Ben Carson is whooping his ass. So we got Donald Trump totally dominating the polls. Ben Carson, according to the latest polls, is like now number two, not Jeb. And according to the latest poll in Iowa, Carly Fiorina, the former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, who does have a lot of charisma, I got to say, Carly Fiorina is now number three in Iowa, in a certain poll in Iowa. So Jeb has fallen to fourth. So you almost got to pity the guy.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, in a sense, I kind of pity anybody who's has to be a Bush. I mean, you know, the torment that if there's a soul in these people, you know, the torment it must go through, you know, when and it finally, you know, meets its maker and realizes what it's done would be pretty unimaginable. And if they don't have a soul at all, that's probably even worse. So, you know, in a way, I'd kind of feel sorry for
him. No, I think he definitely has a soul. I mean, he's definitely his own man in a lot of ways. Let's remember, he did not go to Yale. He chose to go to the University of Texas at Austin instead. You know, he's clearly from a family that's very, very old, blue blood Connecticut. We know that, you know, the financial power that the Bush family has had over the years. And yet he chose to not marry a WASPy woman, but he married a Columba, as a Mexican. He learned Spanish and he converted to Catholicism. And there's certain parts of him that I feel like I think he's an authentically very nervous person who did not take to the campaign trail naturally. You know, he seems to be you know, in the first debate, he was kind of clunky in the first debate. And I think that was the beginning of his descent in the polls, you know, after his choppy performance, to say the least, in the first Fox News debate.
I mean, it's funny. The Bush family, it has a lot of people who are really not really skilled liars. You know, none of them are particularly good liars. You know, Obama is a much better liar, probably a better person, too, but certainly a better liar than any of these Bushes. And yet somehow they get themselves elected. You know, they have some kind of front. But you're right, Jeb seems more nervous. Both HW and W at least, you know, always looked pretty calm, well, most of the time. But, yeah, Jeb looks like he's not entirely in his element as a politician. Maybe he does have a soul.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he had that he even had like a dalliance in the socialist club at Andover, little-known facts about Jeb Bush. You know, when he was at Andover prep school before college. And I also heard he had some sadistic tendencies at Andover as well. So this is not.
So he was a member of the sadistic socialists.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I was talking with Ibrahim Sudi during the first half of the show about, you know, 9/11 truth, where's it going? You know, Ibrahim feels that it's kind of spinning its wheels. And, you know, your article makes it clear that there are people willing to put it on the line to keep this alive, to, you know, in a kind of a somewhat dangerous situation, getting Jeb's face on the campaign trail. And there, you know, all these little pockets and scattered corners of the internet people are doing stuff like this, pushing it ahead, keeping the issue on the front burner. Ibrahim thinks we need some sort of 9/11 Truth coalition with all of the professional groups kind of joining together with a single logo or a single sort of seal of approval. You know, we are the 9/11 Truth Coalition, to give the appearance of kind of being on the same page and working for the same goal, which would be justice. But on the other hand, there is a side of this truth movement that is actually unstoppable because it's leaderless resistance. I mean, there's no organization to bust up. There's no leader to assassinate. It's just all of these people who care about justice doing what they're good at. And, you know, Mike certainly was good at interrupting, or, you know, at putting a hard question to Jeb Bush. And, you know, you're good at a whole lot of things, Sander. And everybody's got their own talents, their own skills, doing their own thing. And you know, Ibrahim's right. We shouldn't waste too much time arguing petty logistical details, demolitions and things like that. But on the other hand, this glorious sort of decentralization in the truth movement seems to me to be a strength as well as a weakness.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I can definitely address a lot of those points. I think it's there's a lot there to talk about. And I always appreciate creative new thinking about this sprawling social movement that is the 9/11 truth movement. I mean, it's beginning to kind of, I think maybe you could say it's definitely beginning its adolescence. You know, it's 14 this year. You know, ever since 9/11, there's been a 9/11 truth movement. Some of us were there, you know, within days, within weeks, you know, writing and publishing. So, I think what's different right now, what's most motivating for me right now, it kind of like almost supersedes the question of do we need a coalition or not. The question for me right now is can we realize what a great opportunity we have right now, that the rules of the past are really kind of very different. You know, we've always been marginalized and scorned, ridiculed. People have lost their jobs, whether in academia or otherwise. Right, Kevin? So what's different now is that with this issue around the 28 pages, you know, there was 28 pages censored by President George W. Bush from the Congressional Joint Inquiry. It's a big black hole. It's been kind of like the 500-pound gorilla in the room, you know, another smoking gun in the 9/11 official story that is just, you know, indicates that something's extremely rotten in Denmark. Why were 28 pages that had to do with, you know, it's always been common knowledge that these had something to do with the Saudis and something having to do probably with the Saudi Bush relationship with the Saudi CIA liaison and financing of the attacks. And so those are all really super hot topics. And, you know, the 9/11 truth movement can be very heady, very intellectual, very cerebral. It's a lot of people that want to spend more time debating stuff in an online forum or an email group than taking action. I'm trying to push us towards taking action. We've got 18 co-sponsors now in Congress with H.R. 14. That's the House Resolution 14 if passed, it would make it a law to release these 28 pages. We've had members of Congress say that their hair stood up on end and that everything they thought they knew about 9/11 was rewritten by them having the privilege to sequester themselves in this underground room and read the 28 pages. Those are the only people that can actually read the 28 pages. You know, we're supposed to be living in a free society, and yet only members of Congress who express interest to go into the chamber and read the secret 28 pages. You know, former Senator Bob Graham has been a big advocate for releasing the 28 pages. And so,
Senator, how do you think these 28 pages upend their view of 9/11 specifically? Like, if I were one of these people and I read these 28 pages, and if it was basically just saying that there was Saudi government financing for some of these hijacker patsies, you know, I would say, okay, so what? I mean, obviously the Saudi government by itself is not going to be attacking the United States. That's completely ridiculous. Saudi government is basically a puppet of the United States, and one would think that people like Graham would know that. So what take on 9/11 are they going to conceivably get from reading these 28 pages? How are it's being upended, and what's it ending up at? What's their final take on 9/11 after reading this? They never seem to say.
Yeah, and I course, can't answer that with authority because I you'd have to talk to people who've actually read the 28 pages. But it seems that it's a traumatic red pill-like experience to be exposed to this information. And obviously it's not just, oh, that there was Saudi money for the hijackers, the so-called hijackers. I mean, we already sort of know that, right? Princess Haifa, the wife of Prince Bandar Bush, was sending money to the Patsies, Nawaf al-Hazmi and Khalid al-Maidar, when they were living in San Diego. We already know that when they were in San Diego, they were living with an FBI informant. They were like 2 degrees of separation away from the FBI itself. And we already know that Senator Bob Graham was really trying to subpoena the FBI and get the FBI to actually tell him about those San Diego FBI connections to the hijackers. I think what the Congress people who read the 28 pages, I'm going to speculate and say what they probably read is not just that there was Saudi financing, but there was a very strong element of the U.S. government that knew about it and turned a blind eye or said that's totally fine or came up with the idea. You know, it's kind of like when I had suspicions about who might have tipped off the Iranians to invite me to a conference, and I called you and you said, oh, and not only do I think it's a grand idea, but I gave them the idea to invite you. You know, so it's kind of like, it's just like that, Kevin. It's just like, not only did the CIA and the powers that be inside the Pentagon and certain factions of the Bush White House, not only did they turn a blind eye, but they probably originated it. Maybe there's some sort of, I mean, that's what would be really, that's what would create the emotional effect that we're talking about here. These Congress people are having an emotional reaction in which they're saying that everything I knew is revised, heavily revolutionized, you know, that my consciousness, my idea about what 9/11 actually was has been upended. And that sounds like something that that's the experience that many of us have had. I mean, I remember reading Synthetic Terror for the first time and realizing that my own first book on 9/11 didn't go far enough, you know, or maybe some of us remember the first time we saw a really great 9/11 truth movie, you know, like Loose Change or the Sophia Small Storm film, 9/11 Mysteries.
Yeah.
Or what about Jonathan in Denver's film?
Jonathan Elanoff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What was that?
Core of Corruption.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many we could just, like, name drop so many different films. But those are three films. You know, just it's the paradigm of thinking, like, my suspicions were right, that there is truly something rotten in Denmark. And then you have this experience of, like, am I the only one? And that's, of course, it's terrible to think that you're the only one because then you feel alienated. But you're not. You're not the only one. And there's a huge movement out there. And so for the first time right now in 2015, we've got 18 members of Congress who are not the only ones. You know, 18 members of Congress have been co-sponsors of this legislation that will release the 28 pages. I'm not saying if, I'm saying it will. It will happen. You know, here in New York, we're going to be raising money. We're going to be starting a lobbying group. We're going to be working with the D.C. 9/11 truth people. You know, this is the first time ever we're going to have a serious lobbying group set up in New York and D.C. to raise awareness, to focus on this issue. You know, we've had, there's actually a really great video piece on YouTube, of all places, and Fox News did a great interview. What's that guy, Shepard? Shepard Smith? No. Okay. What's the anchor on Fox? Is like Shepard.
Anyway. No, I'm not really a Fox watcher. When I was interviewed by Hannity the first time on Fox, I didn't even really know who he was. You know, Hannity and Combs, who's that? And
right. Okay, well, Judge Napolitano, Shepard Smith, yeah. Judge Napolitano was on as a guest, and Shepard Smith was the anchor. It's on YouTube. Highly recommend it. It comes right up when you say Shepard Smith, Judge Napolitano, 28 pages, 9/11. It's an incredible video because you have like this Fox News guy and Judge Napolitano. Napolitano.
He's a bit of a truther. I mean,
That's true. He's been great on Able Danger. He's been great on a lot of issues over the years.
Yeah. Between him and Geraldo, I guess Fox has more truthers than anybody. Or at least any of the mainstream networks.
No wonder the left liberals hate 9/11 Truth so much, because there's lots of overlap. Yeah. There's a part of me that even admires Donald Trump in some ways. And we can get into that a little bit. But, like, you know, I'm able to connect to Uncle Lenny. My uncle, you know, when I see my uncle at family events these days, and he's like not a left of center guy, but he's really into Trump and really into the birth certificate issue and, you know, Obama's murky origins and stuff. And
I think there are some legitimate questions about that.
Yeah.
And I guess it's kind of cool to see, Trump the birther actually doing this well. I mean, regardless of whether you agree with him about everything. That is interesting. So, yeah, why is it that there's, you know, somebody like Trump, who's obviously not exactly a world-class intellectual scholar of world affairs for all of his money, and then these people like these Fox hosts, Geraldo, who are not either, but they've got a little grain of truther in them. And there's so many left official dissident media people at The Nation magazine and The Progressive magazine and Mother Jones and Amy Goodman, all these kinds of places. They won't come near any of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very strange.
The Nation has David Corn, and I think the late, great Mike Rupert had a great point about David Corn. David Corn early on was really against 9/11 Truth and was writing really critical pieces about us. And
it's his job.
Yeah, it's his job. And also, Mike Rupert used to point out that David Corn also wrote a biography of former CIA top brass guy.
Ted Shackley.
Ted Shackley,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, the blonde ghost. And
blonde ghost, right.
Right, so right. CIA drug smuggler and assassin of President Kennedy. And according to David Corn, the nice left liberal writer for The Nation, this Ted Shackley, who murdered President Kennedy and smuggled drugs for the CIA as his career and probably murdered dozens and dozens of good people, is supposedly an okay guy. I mean, what kind of liberal social critic at The Nation is a big fan of Ted Shackley?
Right, Kevin, you're stealing my punchline.
okay, sorry.
You're so excited about this topic that I'm the one that brought up this topic, Kevin. You can't steal my punchline. Anyway, yeah, that's the perfectly proven my thesis, Kevin. That it's just interesting, isn't it, that the ones that are so against 9/11 Truth are like the ones that are seemingly liberal, seemingly progressive. You know, I remember when I was a writer for the religion section of Huffington Post, and I was able to get some stuff in, but then finally I couldn't ignore the fact that they had this policy that was just carte blanche, no conspiracy theories. That was literally part of the Huffington Post policy. You know, they were like taking anybody with a name could write for them, and there was no pay. So they were just kind of like bringing in anybody that was a halfway decent writer, and they were, you know, creating value. They created value. I mean, Huffington Post later sold itself to AOL for some, $100 million, something like, I'm not sure how much it was, but
I bet they didn't give you any of that.
No. And I, at that point, I'd already resigned because I didn't want to write for a place that was, that had this weird liberal vibration and also this policy that said no conspiracy theories. So,
well, that's basically like saying, we're part of the CIA, because after all, it was the CIA that invented and put into circulation this term conspiracy theorist as a pejorative for anybody questioning what happened to JFK. And then they keep bringing it back for all these other hot button issues. Any issue that's important enough that it would actually change the world if we went on that issue, it becomes a conspiracy theory.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. Because that's a big breakthrough revelation in this book, Conspiracy Theory in America, by Lance DeHaven Smith. He says actually the whole vibration of negativity around the term conspiracy theory is not just a cultural value that comes from planet Mars. It actually comes directly from a CIA memo in the wake of the JFK assassination. They said they effectively said we're going to tar people who question this official story that we're fomenting with this brush, and the brush is the conspiracy theorist and conspiracy theory, and it always seems to be pronounced with a sneer in this culture.
Yeah, it's kind of hilarious, really, that You know, they're laughing at these paranoids, and at the same time, the CIA is conspiring against the people that they're labeling paranoids because they think the CIA is conspiring against them, which it is. It's the same thing with Cass Sunstein, right? Cass Sunstein puts out his book, Conspiracy Theories, Causes and Cures, and says that, well, someday we're going to have to outlaw conspiracy theories because they're very dangerous. But in the meantime, we should just infiltrate conspiracy groups and spread beneficial cognitive diversity, and we should disable the purveyors of conspiracy theory. So the government should infiltrate conspiracy groups and disable the purveyors of conspiracy theories. And this is Obama's information czar, you know, one of the top law professors in America saying this, publishing it in an Ivy League law journal. Now, how can you not be a paranoid conspiracy theorist when you read this? I mean, they're conspiring to destroy the First Amendment, you know, to someday lock you up for talking about things that they call conspiracy theories. And meanwhile, they're plotting to have the government infiltrate your group and, quote unquote, disable you. And he's writing this openly. And we're not supposed to be paranoid.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, but let's keep it positive. Or let me just try to steer us towards something I want to talk about.
Go for it.
I'm sorry. Your points about Cass Sunstein are noble and good. And but he's such a freak that if I focus on that too much right now.
Okay, forget Cass Sunstein. Where do you want to go, Sander?
I just want to tell your audience, and who are mostly friends of mine or care about the same issues I care about, is that we're putting together a really cool event in New York City around the anniversary, the 14th anniversary of 9/11. We're doing an all-day symposium with lots of panels, lots of interactivity. We're going to have people seated by their local congressional district. So we'd love to get people from across the country to come. We've even got people from Denmark coming, Kevin, and they're going to be crashing in my wood shop. So if you want to come to New York City and you need a free place to stay, bring an air mattress and a sleeping bag because Sander Hicks will let you crash for free in his lovely wood shop. And sure, it's a little bit dusty, but it has an incredible view of Manhattan. And it'll be a New York experience you'll never, ever forget. So 9/12/15, people, is the big symposium, all-day symposium. Yours truly, Sander Hicks, will be speaking. But I'm not the only spiritual, intellectual, luminary on the roster. In fact, we've got John Perkins, author of a very popular book, Secrets of an Economic Hitman, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. We've got Lance DeHaven Smith, the author of the aforementioned Conspiracy Theory in America. We've got the great Wayne Madsden of Wayne Madsden Report, Washington, D.C., Bureau Chief of the Truth, and much more. Fantastic people. Bill Jacoby, Les Jamison, and I are going to be on a panel about activism, talking about actual activism, actual things, talking a lot about 28 pages, talking about congressional pressure, congressional support, supporting the 18 different reps of the 18 different congressional reps who are co-sponsoring H.R. 14, the legislation in Congress. I mean, never before, Kevin, have we had this opportunity. We've got legislation in Congress that could – who knows what it could do. It could. I think it's the Achilles heel of the 9/11 cover-up, you know. It could really open up this – kind of like that scene in the old Clash of the Titans where the Perseus grabs a spear and he unscrews the cap in the Achilles heel of this – giant iron demonic giant soldier, imperialist soldier figure that was trying to kill him, and he unscrews the cap of the Achilles heel and all the life force flows out and it's black liquid nastiness, and that's what I'm imagining here. We have a colossus in front of us and it seems impregnable, but it's not impregnable, and there's like actually, you know, through a fluke of history or through a lot of people waking up, you know, through the tireless efforts of the 9/11 truth movement over 14 years, we now have 18 people in Congress who have co-sponsored H.R. 14, and we're going to get the 28 pages released.
All right. Well, that sounds like a great event you're having there on the 12th in New York. And, you know, people who want to go to both coasts could also come on the 10th in Oakland, California, California, where the 9/11 Film Festival is happening once again. I'm going to be a keynote speaker there, and there'll be a lot of other great people as well. I think Peter Dale Scott will be talking, Peter Phillips of Project Censored, David Chandler, the high school teacher who shamed NIST when he showed that Building 7 actually does come down at free fall for the first few seconds, and Barbara Honegger talking about the Pentagon, and on and on and on. Lots of really good stuff. So that's on the 10th at the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, and people can find out more about it or watch the live stream. Go to nolizeradio.org, and you can find out more. And that's where the live stream will be broadcast on September 10th at 2 o'clock Pacific time. That's where I'm going to be this September 11th. I usually go to New York, Sandra. More often than not, I'm in New York. But this time, they finagled me into going back to San Francisco. So there you have it.
Your old stomping grounds.
Yeah, that's right. Any excuse to go back to San Francisco. I really enjoyed my time there. And not that there's anything wrong with New York, but this is like two times in San Francisco inside of 2 months. And it's been a long time since I did that. You know, I've been living in Wisconsin for years and years and years. So it's very, very nice to be invited out there. So a big thank you to all those guys. Yeah, this time of year, Sandra, things kind of rev up. You know, people pay attention to 9/11. The mainstream propaganda factory keeps putting out these kinds of stupid memorial pieces designed to try to inculcate people with a sort of a quasi-religious fervor around the official version of 9/11 as a mass human sacrifice to, you know, go out and fight those who hate our freedoms, but, you know, should honor the dead by shutting down our critical intellects and all this kind of stuff. I mean, that's pretty much what the mainstream is mainly pumping out. And the truth movement, of course, gets all energized, and we have these conferences, and people like Mike Jackman get active and get in Jeb Bush's face. It's kind of an annual cycle almost, and we're moving into the real upswing, this high-energy period right before the anniversary.
Exactly, exactly. And it's going to be high-energy going into the 15-year anniversary. You know, that's a big milestone, 15 years of grassroots activism, and it seems to be having a good effect, and I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, it seems like ordinary people are rising up. You know, this is another issue I was discussing with Ibrahim. You know, he thinks that people really should be deferring to professional knowledge. And I'm sure he's frustrated because he's a PhD structural engineer with like a dozen structural engineering licenses, so some ridiculous number of licenses. He's probably the most qualified structural engineer on Earth and then some. But anyway, he apparently is probably frustrated that people without that kind of professional skill have 1,001 opinions on what happened to the towers. So he's kind of advocating, like, defer to the people with the professional skills and expertise. And, you know, I'm all for that. We're at least listening to them and paying attention to them and honoring them. But there is something about 9/11 truth that's really a sort of wonderful wake-up call for ordinary people, you know, just people who recognize that the so-called experts, whether they're journalistic experts who give us our mainstream media feeds, whether it's the academic experts who control our colleges and universities, our legal experts who control our courtrooms and our police departments, and our military experts who are involved in security, our intelligence experts who are supposed to know what's really going on, all of those experts have completely failed us on this. And ordinary people who are not part of these pyramids of expertise are the ones who are making an issue of this. I mean, this is the greatest, you know, populist, ordinary person's cognitive revolution in history, don't you think?
Wow. You should run for office, Kevin. You are so eloquent. It's amazing.
Well, I did that once, Sander. You've run for office a couple of times.
Huey Long. You're the Huey Long of the Wisconsin area. Yeah, the same land that produced Scott Walker is producing someone new.
Yeah, well, you know, you and Scott Walker are both probably better looking than I am. I don't know, man. Comparisons with Scott Walker probably aren't too flattering to either of us.
Well, it's funny. He's got that same vibration that Jeb has, that kind of nervousness, the deer in the headlights stiffness, right?
Yeah. What's that about?
Well, his name is Walker. You know, he's a cousin of George Walker Bush.
Well, yeah, okay, here's my theory. Here's why they're both nervous, right? Okay, so you said that Jeb was a member of the Sadistic Socialist Club, and Scott Walker was allegedly photographed nude on a Nazi flag. I don't know if you heard that, or in a thong bikini on a Nazi flag.
Uh-huh.
This is an internet rumor anyway. So I think they're both into like really sick and twisted, perverted stuff, or at least they were when they were in college, and they're really nervous that that's going to come out, and that's why they're so nervous and twitchy.
Yeah. Some people are like that. You can tell they've got a lot of secrets. But I mean, is it just an internet rumor? Or do you have pictures?
There are pictures floating around the internet purporting to be Scott Walker, but of course Snopes.com says that it probably isn't really Scott, so that's pretty reassuring.
Yeah. Good old Snopes, yeah.
Yeah, anybody with a search engine could just, you know, Scott Walker, Nazi flag or something, and you'll probably find it. It's a pretty disgusting image. I wouldn't really recommend it. Scott Walker is hideous enough to look at anyway, but, like, almost nude on a Nazi flag, it's enough to turn your stomach.
Well, despite that warning, I'm Googling it right now because, of course...
You have a strong stomach, Sander.
Yeah, okay.
Anybody who can look into all of these creepy... horrific issues that we deal with in the truth movement, you know, and Sander, you know, you and I are both part of the full truth movement, looking for the whole awful truth about everything, you know, all of these issues, no matter how shocking, disgusting, perverted, sick, gross, twisted, corrupt, the whole, whatever it is, we'll go there. We'll look at it. But, you know, sometimes I think it's kind of a tough job. I mean, it's like, wow, what is this really? I have to look at this horrible stuff all my life. You know, sometimes I want to just go out to, you know, Arcadia and relax with the shepherds and the flowers and the, you know, the birds chirping. Because, my goodness, there's a new horrific corruption story, it seems like, a new false flag every day or two. It's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it. So did you find the picture?
Oh, yeah, the Scott Walker picture, yeah. There's like, if you Google Scott Walker Nazi flag, on Google Images, it's not terrible. To me, it's
pretty disgusting. But you know, I'm sick of Scott Walker anyway. I mean, just looking at Scott Walker in any condition, pretty much makes me miserable. I don't even like to think about the guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's come out as like as the world's worst Islamophobe and Zionist now. It's like he's they're all in this race to the bottom to see who can get the most money from the Zio-Nazi mafia thug Sheldon Adelson. So each Republican candidate is like, you know, going one step further and like, I will rip up the agreement with Iran during my first minute in office. Oh, that's nothing. I'll burn the agreement with Iran during my first 10 seconds in office. Well, I'm going to like use it for toilet paper during my first 0.1 millisecond in office. Come on, Sheldon, give me those billions. It's a disgusting spectacle.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the agreement with Iran?
Well, it's just completely pathetic, the whole thing, because there's no real Iranian nuclear crisis. Iran is the only country in the world that has nuclear weapons completely outlawed as a matter of absolute religious law by the supreme authority in the land. You know, the Ayatollah Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic, absolutely banned all nuclear weapons and all weapons of mass destruction, including biological and chemical weapons. And when the Iraqis started just hideously mowing down thousands, tens of thousands of Iranians with chemical weapons supplied by the United States and through Germany, the Iranians, who could have manufactured a lot more chemical weapons and used them more strategically and more effectively than the Iraqis ever could have, chose not to because it was illegal, because it was haram, it was religiously forbidden to use chemical weapons. So they let tens of thousands of their people be hideously maimed, disfigured, and killed with chemical weapons that were sent by the United States and refused to use them in return, even though it would have given them a huge strategic advantage. So all of those weapons of mass destruction are absolutely banned in Iran as a matter of supreme religious law that was stated by Khomeini, the founder, and it's been reaffirmed by his successor, the Ayatollah Khamenei. So this is the only country on earth where you don't even have to worry about any nuclear weapons program. And yet the Israelis, who have 400-plus nukes, plus they may be running around the world blowing people up with mini nukes, certainly some evidence for that. And the world's most extreme nuclear rogues and outlaws have fabricated this completely bogus Iranian nuclear crisis. So just the whole story about it is so appalling that there even is this story out there, that there's any necessity for this agreement. It's all completely ludicrous. But given the situation, given Zionist power in the world and the media in the U.S., it's probably a good thing that they have the agreement, because basically what it's saying is, okay, we're going to put this issue to bed. Zionists, you can stop trying to push us into having a war with Iran, because we're not going.
Wow. Well, that was refreshing, because I didn't know about the religious edict against nuclear weapons. And are you saying, see, I grew up in the 80s in D.C. I was really into international relations. We used to debate the Iran-Iraq war a lot, heard a lot about it. I heard that chemical weapons were used by both sides.
No, they were not used by Iran.
Huh.
Yeah, you can go back and check. I mean, they're at least
I've got it up on Wikipedia right now. I'm
pull it up and check it out, yeah. See, I've read one kind of standard anti-Iran account of the war between the U.S. and Iran by a military historian working for West Point, I think. What's that one called? Something like The Long War, The Endless, something like that. Anyway, that's a huge, voluminous book. And then I've read a number of the books that I consider more reliable by dissidents, like Flint and Hillary Leverett, Going to Tehran, is a very good sort of revisionist account, which I would say is basically a more accurate account of U.S.-Iranian relations and all of these matters. And then I also read, what's that guy's name? There's an Iranian diplomatic political guy who defected basically to the U.S., who wrote a big history of you know, Iran in terms of its relations with the U.S. And all of these sources, not one of them claims that Iran used any chemical weapons against Iraq. So if there is a source out there saying that, I'm curious as to who they are, because I thought that was pretty much a matter of record, even among the anti-Iran people.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, I think you're right, because I'm in the Wikipedia, you know, which is crowdsourcing and somewhat credible.
Crowdsourcing with Zionists in control.
But I think you're right. I think it actually supports your position, because there is no section about Iranian use of chemical weapons. There's a big section about use of chemical weapons by Iraq. It says also, according to Iraqi documents, assistance in developing chemical weapons was obtained from firms in many countries, including the U.S., West Germany, Netherlands, U.K., and France. Notice that the U.S. is first.
Probably doesn't mention that the Ayatollah Khomeini came out and explicitly banned any WMD, including chemical weapons, even though they were being hit by them.
Yeah. It goes down here. It says that the U.S. has accused Iran of using chemical weapons, but the allegations have been disputed. There's a report from Human Rights Watch between 92 and 94, did a two-year study that included a field investigation in Iraq, but the allegations were marred by a lack, quote, marred by a lack of specificity as to time and place and the failure to provide any sort of evidence.
That sounds pretty marred.
That's pretty marred.
Yeah. Well, the Iranians are constantly getting accused of everything under the sun, because I mean, they've got a lot of people. You know, there were a number of people in Iran who ended up on the wrong side of the revolution, who absolutely loathe the current regime. And then you also have the Zionists, who are terrified that, you know, this successful experiment in Islamic society and self-governance is going to spread around the Middle East and put the Zionists out of business. So there's just a massive amount of anti-Iran propaganda, and it's really warped the mainstream discourse. But it's starting to change. I mean, I'm seeing people like Flint and Hillary Leverett starting to get more of a hearing, and I think the realists are getting, you know, into control of that particular issue. So I'm actually kind of guardedly optimistic. So we won't have a war with Iran. We'll probably just have World War III with Russia and China and blow the world up, but hopefully not. Anyway, Sander, it's been fun. I love talking with you, man.
I love talking to you. You're a gift from God. You're on the path of truth, Kevin, and you are speaking with a prophetic voice of wisdom. So continue to pray and continue to love the truth.
Amen, brother. All right. Well, thank you, Sander. Until the next time.
Till next time. Good night.
Good night. Salam alaikum, Sander.